Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Addressing the state budget debate, Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute, had a guest opinion column that ran in several of the Lee newspapers all across Montana, and I've gotten to share some of his insight in the past looking at the state budget debate, especially in the immediate aftermath of Montana's legislative session. So look forward to catching up with Kendall here today. First off, Kendall, great to have you back on Montana Talks. Before we get to the state budget, I think you saw the very same piece that I shared from the Daily Interlake in Kalispell. Look at this. Flathead County Commissioners, all three Republicans, I should note, they are lowering property taxes by hundreds of dollars for residents. And basically what they're saying is, hey, we've got a lot of growth, which means we've got a lot of growth in revenues. So we are going to lower property taxes. What? Why is this such a shocking concept for so much of the state of Montana?
Well, I think that why it's shocking is because most of our government is addicted to excessive spending. I mean, we have a spending problem. And the interesting thing is that the Flathead County Commissioners have actually been great on spending over the last 10 years. They've actually kept spending restrained, growing less than population and inflation over the last 10 years. And so because they've been fiscally responsible, they're able to cut taxes.
Yeah, in this article, and I was, frankly, I'm glad the Daily Interlake actually printed it in full, is, and then they shared the data that was given to them by Flathead County. I mean, they point out the very fact that, okay, you have more houses being built, you have more businesses going in. That means the local city and county governments have more money coming in, not less. So that means that existing property taxpayers should not be forced to pay more. In fact, they should pay less. But yet that's not the message that you get in Missoula or in Bozeman and, frankly, in other parts of the state of Montana. They never want to tell you how much more of your money they're getting because they just want to spend it all. They don't want to actually allow you to keep more of your own money.
That's exactly right. You know, I'd encourage listeners to go to our website, frontierinstitute.org. Go check out our Real Local Budgets report from 2024. We detail the growth of local city county budgets across the state, and we compare them. And you'll be able to go and see how Flathead County measures up to a county like Gallatin, and you'll see a stark difference. Spending in Gallatin County is going up like a hockey stick, while Flathead County has been fiscally responsible. And I think you see the difference in the tax burden.
That's right. And somehow those Democrat Gallatin County commissioners, they weren't able to lower your property taxes if you're listening to KMMS right now. But they sure figured out a way in the budget to boost their own salaries, didn't they? All right. We got lots to talk about here this morning with Kendall Cotton, CEO of the Frontier Institute. Stand by. Quick break. Plus, you can jump in on the conversation. You can message us on the Montana Talks app, or you can call 406-294-0970.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, before we get to the state budget debate, I feel like we got to talk a little bit more about local government spending, county, city government spending, county government spending here. And really, we are starting on a, it's always nice when you can start on a positive note and on a good note, and this great news out of Flathead. Yeah, right? Isn't it nice to have some good news on the property tax front for a change? Kendall Cotton with us here. So, yeah, Kendall, this Daily Interlake article, you never read these numbers. You never hear these numbers reported in most media outlets. But they're quoting here, County Administrator Pete Melnick, and a great guy, by the way. I ran into him and his wife at that Western Congressional Caucus Summit a couple of weeks ago. He's a retired Fulbert 06 from the Coast Guard, so it was fun hearing more of his story here. But he shared these numbers, and the Daily Interlake actually reported it here. Total property tax revenue increased to $53.6 million, a $2.6 million bump from last year and a $5.2 million bump from fiscal year 2024. And new properties coming onto the tax rolls made up over half of those increases. So, you know, taxpayers, property taxpayers are going to see, you know, hundreds of dollars in decreases on their bills and their property taxes. And again, we need to highlight this because most city governments never want to tell you how much more money they are getting right now because they don't want to have to lower your taxes. They want to spend every single dime of it and more.
That's right. You know, there's no free lunches in government, Aaron. And a lot of our local governments want to treat government just like that. Like the money's free, but it has to come from somewhere. And at the end of the day, all government spending in one way or the other has to be paid for by the taxpayer. You know, one of the things we're seeing in Missoula County, for instance, in their budget proposal this year, where, by the way, they're raising property taxes, you know, they are asking for taxpayers to pick up the tab for paying for programs that were funded by federal grants that now President Trump and DOGE have rolled back. So now when the federal money runs out, the taxpayers are on the hook for paying for this stuff. And, you know, even federal money isn't free. It's all got to be paid for by the taxpayer.
That's a great point. You know, I was talking with our friend David Noble earlier this morning, and, you know, good job on his part. He was praising Yellowstone County's commissioners because they reduced taxpayer funding for the art museum in Yellowstone County. And David made a good point. I didn't even know my taxpayer dollars were going to an art museum. Why don't they get fundraising support for something like that? Why when Yellowstone County needs a new jail and they need school security in their schools, why are we funding an art museum? And then on a related note, Tom Burnett, former legislator out of Gallatin County, he sent me an email earlier this week. Public libraries. The visits to public libraries in Montana are down. Over the last 10 years, a 30% decline in visits to public libraries. Yet the cost to operate those libraries has gone up 67%. In 10 years. So again, why are we doing the things that we're doing, especially at the city and county levels?
Yes. Well, this is why, from our point of view at Frontier Institute, we think that firm limits on the growth of government spending at the local level, but also at the state level and even the federal level are so important. Because if you don't have a ceiling on how fast you can grow the government, you don't have to make any hard decisions and trade-offs about what's the priority for funding for the government. And so, yeah, of course, if you don't have a limit, then everything's on the table and you can just, you know, hand out money to all your friends and pet projects. But if you're limited, then you actually have to make decisions about what does our city or county or state actually need.
That's right. Well, and that's a good tie-in now to the state budget debate here. I like the way that you summarized. I thought you did a very fair opening paragraph here to summarize the debate. And then, of course, you gave your perspective, a very reasoned perspective here. But Kendall Cotton has a guest opinion column I pulled up from the Billings Gazette. Taxpayers have received mixed messages since the legislative session about the growth of the state budget. Some lawmakers claim the budget grew spending less than 2%, far under the growth of inflation and in line with general metrics for fiscal responsibility. Other lawmakers have argued that this session, quote, blew up the budget with double-digit mega spending growth. And then Kendall writes, that is quite a contrasting view of our state's fiscal responsibility. So who's right here, Kendall?
So I explored that question in my piece that you cited there. And, you know, the folks who are saying that the state grew double digits are taking basically a conventional approach to measuring the growth of the state budget. They're looking at the top line of the budget, the growth of overall spending. And if you look at the legislative fiscal division's numbers and their reports, if you look at the top lines, yeah, they're correct. You know, we're looking at, you know, at least like 13% increase in the total overall growth of spending for this biennium compared to last biennium. So they're correct if you just look at the top line. But on the other hand, the folks who are saying that there has been only, you know, like 0.7% or less than 2% growth, they're using this official metric that's written into law called the biennial comparison. And that comparison is very narrowly only looking at appropriations, and it's excluding things like interfund transfers. So, for example, that would be like transfers from the general fund to new investment trust accounts like the Go Trust.
Interesting. So you're saying, no, it does that spending this biennium. We're not even talking about what it does down the road. We're talking about this biennium right here, right now. All right, hold that thought. Back to Kendall right after this. Did you know?
I learned it from my adoptive mom. Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to it here with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute, looking at the state budget here in Montana. And how much did the budget, how much did government spending at a state level actually go up following the legislative session? I've got two competing guest opinion in, columns in front of me right now. I've got Kendall Cotton's piece addressing the state budget debate. And then also the Bozeman Daily Chronicle a while back had a guest opinion column from Representative Lou Jones out of Conrad. And so essentially, Kendall, you know, to break this down kind of simply along political lines for our listeners, basically you have the Freedom Caucus, more conservative members of the legislature arguing that, hey, look, we saw a massive increase in government spending in the last legislative session. And then you have Representative Lou Jones, who is the leader of the more moderate Republicans that have called themselves, you know, various names in the past, like the Solutions Caucus, et cetera. They're claiming, no, actually, the spending is much lower. In reality, that money that they're calling spending was set aside in basically a trust account. That money will be set aside and spent in the years and decades to come. So you can't argue that that's a spending increase in the next biennium. Is that a fair breakdown of kind of, you know, how the sides broke down, especially within the Republican caucus during the legislative session?
I think that's fair. And you know, I think that if you approach this from a technical perspective, both sides are technically right, depending on the metric that they're citing. And so my critique is that I think this biennial comparison metric that I think has been touted as, you know, the example, you know, that's where they get the number saying that the state only grew 0.7%. I think that's misleading. It's a misleading metric that masks the real scale of government that we saw this biennium. So here's a great example. If we use this biennial comparison methodology, next biennium, the state could like double our taxes, funnel all of that additional revenue into an investment account that's obligated for future spending on subsidized housing and childcare and infrastructure and whatever the state government wants. And the official biennial comparison methodology would register no growth in the budget because they factor out transfers to trust. And I think that's obviously wrong. And that's clearly not representing the burden of government accurately. So I think that we need to reassess the biennial comparison metric a little bit because its methodology is flawed.
Well, and also, if the idea, you know, from the more moderate Republicans is, well, we want to set this money. So the big picture here also is, okay, what has happened in Montana? Well, let's go back to the Trump tax cuts of 2018. The Trump tax cuts take effect. we get a, and I'll credit Lou Jones on this one. He came up with it, or he called it at the time, a Trump bump in revenues, right? So we cut taxes at the federal level. We got a bump in revenue at the state level because the Trump tax cuts boosted the economy. That led to more tax revenue, not less. So Montana got more revenue at the end of the day from the Trump tax cuts. Well, then let's fast forward to 2020. Governor Gianforte gets elected. You've got a first Republican governor in nearly two decades and a Republican legislature. And what do? They cut income taxes. Session one, session two, and now once again, session three. What happens? We get more revenue, not less revenue. Tax cuts are good for the people. It's our money anyway. That ends up fueling the economy. Then the government gets more revenue. But then what happens? They got more revenue. Now the fight begins to figure out a way to spend every single dime of that. And so that's the big picture of what's been taking place over the last few years. So the bottom line is Helena has been awash in cash. And I think there's a lot of us that are out here saying, okay, look, we get it that we want to have bridges replaced and water projects funded and things like that. But that's why the legislature meets every other year to address those needs and to fund those needs. Why do we need to lock it all away and lock all of this money away in a trust account? Why not trust that money with we the people? And then you get more revenue 2 years from now to play with anyway.
That's right. That's right. You know, giving the money back to taxpayers via rebates, it's not categorically a bad idea. It's something that should be debated. You know, should we put the money into a trust account to save for the future? Should we give it back now and let people save and invest that money? That is a fair debate to have. And from, you know, I guess to kind of clarify things, we and, you know, myself personally, I'm absolutely not opposed to the state planning for the long term by responsibly saving and investing. Not arguing it shouldn't. I also don't think it's crazy to factor out, you know, some transfers to get an accurate picture of spending growth. But here's the deal. Putting money, additional taxpayer money in a new investment account that's obligated for future spending is growing government. That's what it is. It's misleading to claim that it's not. And we should represent the growth of state government fairly. And then let the taxpayers decide whether that growth was a good investment, you know, whether they think that putting the money aside in that trust for specific spending priorities like housing and childcare and infrastructure, did we get a good deal or should we have gotten the money back in a rebate? Should we have just left a larger ending fund balance? I mean, these are all fair questions, but we have to represent it fairly. It is growing government. And so therefore, you know, the talking points that we're hearing from the more conservative side of things here, that there was double-digit growth in government this session, is far more accurate from my perspective.
Well, and that's the bingo moment of the whole hour right there, frankly, if you ask me, is, okay, so if you're the average everyday Montanan out there, you are fuming about property values and then subsequent property taxes. And so you're sitting back here saying, okay, wait a minute. They put all of this money. They had a surplus of our money. They took too much of our money in the first place. And granted, you know, great job by the legislature and the governor delivering more income tax relief, some property tax relief, but some people are going to see property tax increases. If you have a family cabin, second homes, possibly some ag increases. And I think for everyday Montanans, we kick back and we look at it and say, okay, you had all this money to set aside in this trust account. Why is anybody paying a dime more in property taxes? Period. I just think that's the way people look at it, and it just piles on the frustration with the property tax system, whether people see individual relief or not. All right, we'll get Kendall's take on that and more, but I mentioned we're taking your phone calls. Let's get to our caller on the phone lines. We've got Ken in the Billings Heights. Ken, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for jumping in on the conversation.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. It was a good conversation. The thing I can understand is, how can these radical governors, mayors, and senators, and legislatures, and everything else, and these phony judges, I don't know what the heck you want to call them, how can they dictate to the federal government that they're not going to comply in their state or their county or their city or anything else of what the federal government says. You know, to me, it sounds like they should be in, they're the same, you know, they are the same people as who they're protecting. So they should be taken care of just the same way if you're going to go into Chicago and get rid of all the riffraff.
That's it. Yeah. So lawless leftist judges, lawless leftist mayors and governors, case in point, Illinois, for example. Right. Okay. Kendall Cotton. Yeah. Tackle that one for us, because it's interesting that some of the same people that Ken just referenced there, you know, when the states actually have states' rights, and the states actually have authority and the feds don't, they're all about trampling on the states' rights. But now, where you have a clear case of federal authority, especially on immigration issues, et cetera, all of a sudden they want to ignore the law in that particular issue.
Yes. But, you know, I think the point we made earlier about federal money not being free is exactly salient here, too. Federal money's not free, not even just from a financial point of view, but from a policy point of view. You know, all these federal grants flowing into the state that fund a lot of our state and local government programs, they come with strings attached. They come with requirements for auditing and reporting and matching funds and, you know, staff that the agencies have to staff up. And one of the scary things from my perspective is that I think there's very little oversight from the legislature on the federal grants coming into the state and what those grant terms are obligating the state to do and how they're dictating policy. So I've been, looking at options for the state legislature to get their hands around this issue and start having more transparency. Because Aaron, I don't know if you know, but I mean, state bureaucrats can essentially go apply for federal grants like willy-nilly and obligate the state to grant terms without the legislature formally, officially having to sign off on that.
That's a great point. Exactly what are you signing us up for here, and how do we, the people, rein that in? How does our own state elected officials rein that in? No, that's a very good point. Let's see. We've got less than a minute to go before the next break, and then we'll get to more calls after that. Morgan in Helena messaged us on the Montana Talks app. Would you tell us again how to find the local budget info on your website?
Yes, you can go to frontierinstitute.org and go find our real local budget report. You can find it, I guess, directly at frontierinstitute.org/FY25 real local budget. You can just search on our website too and find it.
All right, great. Well, stand by. We're going to take more of your phone calls coming up here. We've got Willie in the Paradise Valley. In fact, Caden, you can patch that call through right now, and we'll have Willie queued up, ready to go to be our first caller after the break. And then the phone number for you, 406-294-0970. I also got a great message on the app from Joe Dooling in Helena. Well, I'm assuming it's Joe Dooling. Actually, it might have been another Joe. Who knows? Anyway, great message from Joe in Helena. I'll share that right after this as well.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
The Trump administration has moved to disrupt how wages are set for temporary guest farm workers, sparking both celebration and controversy. Last week, USDA announced it will end the long-running farm labor survey, which has collected farm wage data for more than a century. Farm employer groups praised the move, saying the survey inflated pay rates for H-2A guest workers and made U.S. farms less competitive. But the timing has created a regulatory clash. Just hours earlier, a federal judge in Louisiana struck down a 2023 Department of Labor rule that relied on a different data source, the Occupational Employment and Wage Statistics Report. In response, the DOL said it would return to using the Farm Labor Survey to set adverse effect wage rates. That means one agency is scrapping the survey, while the other says it will still need it to set wages for more than 350,000 H-2A workers in 22,000 farms. The National Council of Agricultural Employers applauded USDA's decision, arguing wages should be left to the market, not dictated by government surveys. But worker advocates warn the change could drive down pay, repeating battles seen in past lawsuits. For now, farmers and workers are left waiting to see how federal agencies will resolve their conflicting directions. That's all for today. I'm Lane Nordblond. Mike.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into the phone lines here. Actually, let me sneak a couple of messages in from the Montana Talks app here real quick. This is another random topic altogether, but Joe in Helena sent us a message on the app. Did you hear about the hedge fund that Baucus and Omar's husband are part of? What an odd couple. Yeah, Ilhan Omar and Max Baucus. What an odd couple, that's for sure. Yeah, for those of you who missed it, we covered that story earlier in the week. I think it was the Washington Free Beacon had this big piece where basically Max Baucus, the former Democrat senator from Montana who sold us out to the communist Chinese, apparently he's on the board of this $60 billion hedge fund now or something. He's got all these communist Chinese business ties now as well. But Ilhan Omar's husband, apparently she's no longer married to her brother. Apparently she's got a new husband now. She's the radical Islamic member of Congress from Minnesota. Her wealth skyrocketed 3,500% in just the last year. She's now worth $30 million, according to official disclosure forms. And her husband is getting money thanks to this firm that Max Baucus is on the advisory board of. I mean, for Pete's sake. Just talk about the corruption. It is insane. Fred in the Flathead says this when it comes to the property tax hikes on some folks in Montana, second home owners, rental home owners, things like that, like short-term rentals. Long-term rentals, you're safe, but it's the short-term rentals that are going to see a hike. Fred says this, the legislation played on people's resentments toward out-of-state owners to raise property taxes on second homes. In the end, Montanans were the losers. That's from Fred in the Flathead. Let's go to Willie in the Paradise Valley. Willie, thanks for the call. What's on your mind this morning?
Yeah, good morning. You know, I'm talking about the property tax and stuff, though. I was on the school board at one time, and I don't know where they got these laws that came in or the way they handle the money, but if you didn't spend all your money that year, then they cut you back, and instead of letting you invest it in something for a rainy day, and the same with the federal government. I know my deceased brother worked for the park circus up here, and they'd come in the shop at the end of the fiscal year and say, do you guys need anything, new welders? They might have three brand new welders sitting in the shop, but they'd order another one because if they didn't spend the money, they would lose it the next year. And I don't know where that policy came into place, because you don't run your household like that. You'd put that money in a fund or something, so when something haywire went, then you could have the money there fixing it. So I just throwing that out there to somebody, explain that policy, where that ever came from.
Yeah, that's been a bad, I don't know if you call it policy or just approach or technique that some in corporate world use, certainly in the government, where, yeah, hey, if you don't spend your whole budget, they're not going to give you as much in your budget for the next year. And so it rewards people to irresponsibly, you know, manage resources, right? Because if you're not going to get as much next year, you might need more next year than you need this year, right? And so, but if they tell you, well, if you don't spend it all this year, we're not going to give you the money next year, well, what do you do? You're like, okay, it's the end of the fiscal year, spending spree time. So absurd. Yeah, Willie, thanks for the call. Caden, go ahead and send us our next caller there. We'll patch that one through and then get reaction from Kendall Cotton here, the CEO of the Frontier Institute. Thankfully, he's going to stick with us here a little bit longer. Oh, you might have to patch it through again, Caden. I don't know if I accidentally hit a wrong button there or something like that. All right. Okay, we'll get to the caller here in just a second, because I don't think I was able to get that one patched through here. Let's see. Yeah, Kendall Cotton, I guess your thoughts. Obviously, this reopens the discussion about property taxes because, look, again, most of the property taxes are driven at the local level, the city, county. That's why the Democrats that run Missoula, city, county combined, have raised property taxes on their people over 20% in just the last couple of years alone. But meanwhile, Flathead's Republican county commissioners are lowering property taxes for their people. In Butte, it's kind of a mixed bag. They're lowering property taxes for some in their latest budget, but some are still getting hikes, which makes you wonder, why are some paying, you know, getting hikes? Nobody should be getting hikes right now, frankly.
Yep. You know, so to speak to the, like, kind of savings discussion that was from a caller, you know, my view is this: after fully funding, like, a limited government, a government that does only the necessary things that our founders intended, the state and local government should be setting aside in savings or investments only the minimum of what they need to ensure long-term fiscal stability and no more. So anything beyond that, I think, needs to be directly returned back to taxpayers, because trade-offs matter. No one spends your money as well as you. That was Milton Friedman's great insight. And so the government savings is exactly the opposite. It's taxpayer dis-saving. And I think there's a lot of problems and risk when the government holds money and you don't.
Yeah, great point. Well, I think there's also a conversation to be had here about more government reform at the local level as well. You know, in fact, one story I need to write for our Montana Talks website, you know, there's a couple of strong women running for mayor for a couple of our bigger towns here in Montana. Keisa Davison in Kalispell. Business owner. I've heard great things. I spoke with her. You've got Jennifer Owen in Billings, who is very sharp. I've known her for a number of years. You know, but even if you get a good, strong mayor like Jennifer Owen or Keisa Davison elected in Kalispell, well, if you still have a liberal mob rule on the city council itself, a lot of these mayoral positions are just kind of figurehead type positions. And so maybe we need to look at having, you know, mayors that actually have a little bit more authority and power to actually, you know, be elected to actually run these cities and towns. Anyway, we'll get Kendall's take on that and more, but let's get to the phone calls here. I think, let's see, I know we've got a caller on the line. It's either Greg Franks in Billings or Rod in the Flathead. Who do we got?
It's Greg Franks.
Hey, good. Okay, I knew you were first up, but I wasn't sure if we got you transferred over right or not. Greg, great to hear from you. What's going on?
Yeah. Hey, Aaron, you and I have talked about this before, but I wanted to hear Kendall's perspective on this. With the most of the bulk of our property tax dollars going to school districts and local municipalities and counties, how could we orchestrate a Doge style audit of those facilities and give a full accounting of where those dollars are going and giving that exposure to the voters so they can see the waste, fraud, and abuse that municipalities and school districts are spending their money?
Great question, Greg. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Kendall, your thoughts?
I think we should do it. Absolutely. I think we should have a Doge style investigation from top to bottom, from the locals all the way up to state, even at the federal level too, of waste, fraud, and abuse. But, you know, one of the things I've told a lot of folks as I've talked to people about property taxes and local budgets, the growth of local governments, is that's one of the ways that these politicians get you as an average citizen, is they try and drag you down into the weeds and say, oh, well, we can't live without this particular spending. This is so essential. And they try and obscure the fact that they're spending excessively. And so what I recommend to taxpayers, average citizens, is go to these city, county budget meetings, go to your school board meeting, go and look at the overall growth in spending, see how it measures up to fiscally responsible measures like population and inflation. And if it's growing beyond that, your question to the local leader should be, why? Why is it growing excessively? And what are you going to do to get it back under control? That's not the taxpayer's job to figure out. That's the politician's job to figure out.
I'll bet the more rocks we start turning over, if you had a local Doge all across the state, it'd be so much like the USAID scandal and what Doge uncovered at the federal level, where I'll bet you there are a ton of these left-wing special interest groups that are getting our taxpayer dollars through all of these various whatever programs or grants or this or that, and then they're using our taxpayer dollars to actively fight against us. On a whole host of fronts, the bugs that would crawl out from under those rocks, I'll bet you it would just be like the craziest hatch you've ever seen. Oh, Kendall, we still got you. Your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I completely agree. But I think that it starts with a mandate either from the voters or starting from the top in the executive offices to say, we have to undertake a serious investigation and trim the fat and cut the waste, fraud, and abuse. Without that incentive, these folks in the deep states, in all forms of government are going to face no incentive to actually cut what they're doing. And they're always going to make rationalizations to why they need more spending, not less.
They're always going to figure out a way to spend your money. It's allowing you to keep it. That's the real battle. Okay, we'll get to Rod and the Flathead right after.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, you know, if this topic was going to run out of steam, I was going to talk data centers, energy, and more. But this topic is not running out of power. A couple of callers on the phone lines, a couple of great messages that just came in now as well. Former State Senator Eric Moore in Miles City, thanks for listening in. Just got a great message from him. He says it has to start at the appropriation level. Government is a beast. The only way to control it is to starve it. And that's a great point, because especially here in Montana, we have a balanced budget amendment. If they front load tax relief and tax cuts, they have to count it against the bottom line. Even though you and I know it'll bring in more revenue, they still have to count it against the bottom line. So if they front load that, if they were able to front load that, that's less cookies in the cookie jar for them to start chomping on, right? Robin Livingston, this is an interesting concept here. Robin Livingston says this: municipalities need to emulate universities in creating endowments and seeking grants from philanthropists to pay for everything over and beyond streets and public safety. Now, that was from Robin Livingston. And interesting, you know, Rob, on that point, that's essentially what Sheriff Jesse Slaughter in Cascade County is doing right now to help fund his school safety program. In fact, he told me he's probably going to have a major donor that he'll be announcing here in the coming days. So interesting. He can do it there for legitimate public safety, but yet other folks can't do it for art museums and things like that, right? Let's go to Rod in the Flathead. Rod, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. I just wanted to get into the point that how unconstitutional property taxes really are. You know, you've got a system where the state sets the appraisal rates. It's not done on an independent scale. It's not done through the market. It's done through their own ideas of how to go about it. And then what they do after they make those determinations, then they tax you on an assumed price that you might be able to sell your property at. That's an unrealized gain. That's unconstitutional. You know, the other part about it is that if you don't pay your property taxes, then they're going to take your property away from you. Okay, but you paid for the property. It's your property. It's private property. And yet, if you don't pay that tax based on the ridiculous appraisal rates and paying for unrealized gains because you haven't sold your property yet, they're just going to take it away from you. I also think that the school districts have a lot to do with this, in that there's no incentive to drop the prices on the appraisals. There's no incentive to get lower taxes. There's only an incentive to get higher taxes, so that way the school districts can keep collecting more and more money and spending more and more money on buildings, and oftentimes that they don't need, or that they do a poor job in designing and setting them up, so then they have to be rebuilt again. This process just keeps going and going and going, and like was mentioned earlier, government is a beast that just needs to be reined in. And it's totally out of control. And I have a name for you, a gentleman by the name of Mitch Vexler. You look up on YouTube, Mitch Vexler. He goes through the whole process of what a scam this whole process is.
Very cool.
And there's been multiple interviews done by him. He's got an organization that has been studying this and researching it for quite a long time.
So we'll have to check that one out. Yeah, I know Texas and Florida, they're looking at doing away with property tax system altogether and without, creating some other massive tax on top of that. All right. Hey, thanks for the phone call. Let's see. Go ahead and send us our next caller there. In the meantime, Kendall Cotton, your thoughts.
Hey, I think Rod was spot on. I completely 100% agree. I think that the property tax system is one of the worst type of tax systems. It directly infringes on our right, our fundamental American right to own and use our property. We're basically renting from the government forever. And that is absolutely unfair. He was right, too, to call it essentially a wealth tax. We're taxing the unrealized gains on the houses over our heads. Personally, I think that the conversation ought to be, how do we move away from property taxes? The ideal property tax rate for everybody, in my opinion, is zero.
Well, you know, a lot of our farmer rancher friends will say, hey, we're land rich and cash poor. Hey, that's pretty much every property owner now, right? You're land rich but cash poor, but yet they want your cash for the property taxes anyway. Let's sneak on Marilyn and Lolo next. Marilyn, thanks for the call. I know we're short on time, but Missoula County, you guys just continue to get hammered.
Yeah, so they're asking for another $5.6 million property taxes, and you can go on their county website, and they've got the pages of the breakdown of what, itemized and how much, and there's $300,000 and $400,000 here, there, and everywhere for climate change crap and eco this and eco that and grant money and... You know, a lot of unnecessary, I would say, unnecessary, and a lot of temporary jobs made into full-time and part-time jobs. So they're growing government. They're making part-time jobs full-time. So they're growing government, growing government, growing government, breaking the taxpayers' backs. But can they repave our roads? No, they won't repave our roads. 40 years.
They can't pave your roads, right? But they're lining the pockets of their political supporters, I'll bet, in the process with those phony climate nonsense there. Marilyn, thanks so much for the call. Kendall Cotton, appreciate all your time this morning. Thanks, Kendall, for being with us as well. 20 seconds to go. What do you want to tell folks across Montana?
Hey, thanks, Aaron. It's a pleasure to be on. I just encourage folks to go follow us, frontierinstitute.org. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. It comes out every Thursday via email. That's the best way to stay up to speed with our work.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Great information. Appreciate what you do. Tanner putting out some great information as well. All right. We'll see you for Freedom Friday with Open Phones and more.